In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
It used to be when the government fears the people, you had liberty. They don't fear us anymore. Now we have good reason to fear the government and its tyranny because what we have seen now with the end of the Mueller report, what we've seen is that the government truly is the enemy of the people. What we knew was that this was an inside job to frame Trump for so-called collusion with the Russians to steal the election from Hillary Clinton. Except as we're learning, they are the ones who wanted to steal an election. They are the ones who colluded with each other, with elements within our own government. What we knew was that members of the FBI used their human assets, spies or agents or operatives, to entrap George Papadopoulos, a fringe member of the Trump campaign. They did it using two agents, one to leak information about Hillary emails, a second to be there to prod Papadopoulos into talking about the information the first operative had leaked to him. This isn't the first time we've seen this. Apparently, the FBI now knowingly, willingly, and in my mind, illegally entraps people. We saw it with John Kiriakou, who has told us previously that an FBI operative tried to entrap him when John was serving on the Senate Intel Committee by trying to get him to accept a bribe. One of our own government operatives was trying to entrap an American citizen. John did the right thing and turned it down and even reported it to his superior. But it's more than that, because unbeknownst to John, his superior was also working with the FBI. And isn't that interesting? It seems like the FBI always works in pairs, one to throw the pitch and another agent on the other side to catch it. It's a failsafe. It doesn't do any good to slip intel to you unless they have someone all set up to hear you leak it. Then they've got you on both sides of that charge. As the Mueller probe unfolds, this is something to keep an eye on. Government operatives working together in tandem. If you see one, ask, who's the one on the other side? Where's his partner? On today's show, we'll be talking with two people who have had their lives ruined when the FBI set them up, despite never committing crimes. We'll talk with John Kiriakou now that the Mueller probe has ended to get his thoughts on such things as who was the mastermind behind all this. And we'll also ask that of Dr. Jerome Corsi, whose life has been directly destroyed by the Mueller probe because they thought he had ties to WikiLeaks. We'll talk to him in the second half of the show. I'd like to welcome now former CIA officer and whistleblower John Kiriakou back to the show. He's the author of The Reluctant Spy and Doing Time Like a Spy, both of which we'll link up on iSpyRadio.com. John, it's great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, absolutely. We just love talking with you. So with everything that's going on with this Mueller report, I'd like to go back a little bit as a refresher, especially for anyone who may have missed your earlier visits to iSpy. Because in the middle of this whole Russian collusion hoax and the politics of it, we have to remember that real people are having their lives ruined over a bogus investigation. And yes. I've thought a lot about you during all of this. And I think what happened to you in many ways exemplifies what people are going through right now when they get caught up in these kinds of investigations and agencies that are just determined to use the power of the government to punish people, to advance their own careers in many cases. You were brought up on charges of a crime that you didn't commit, and because the prosecutors were financially breaking you, you agreed to plead guilty to one count of passing classified information to the media. You agreed to that deal on October 22nd. 3 months later, you were sentenced. It was then roughly another month until you went to jail. So basically 4 months between the plea deal and going to jail. Emotionally, what was that like?
Oh, it was utterly devastating. I remember giving an interview in that period because Aaron Schwartz, who was one of the founders of Reddit, had just been arrested and charged with multiple felonies related to putting a link on his website to a report that had been downloaded illegally, as crazy as that sounds. And he was facing 35 years in prison.
Good Lord.
And he, instead of going to prison, he went to his arraignment. He pleaded not guilty and he went home and he killed himself. And the reporter asked me if I was surprised that he had killed himself. And I said, no, what surprises me is that more people don't kill themselves. I said, listen, the Justice Department's point is not just to prosecute you. It is to utterly ruin you professionally, financially, socially. Your friends walk away. Your family members walk away. If you have a felony conviction, you'll never work again. I mean, that's kind of a given, at least not in any 9-to-5 mainstream job. So, yeah, I'm surprised that more people don't kill themselves. Look at Mike Flynn. Let's use Mike Flynn as an example. Now, here's a guy who is a 3-star general and served his country for literally his entire adult life. He finds himself as the White House chief of staff. I'm sorry, forgive me. He finds himself as the national security advisor in the very, very beginning of the Trump administration. And he gets a call from Rod Rosenstein at the Justice Department, the deputy attorney general, who tells him, I want to have some of my guys come over and talk to you, but don't worry, you don't need to have a lawyer present. Well, of course he needed to have a lawyer present. It was a setup. But that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to set him up and to trick him into either saying something that contradicted what he had said in the past or that he had just forgotten about and didn't repeat. Well, that's what happened. And the next thing you know, this patriot has a felony charge of making a false statement to a federal officer.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Is that justice? That's not justice. But that's very typical of what we see in government today.
Well, and you mentioned what a patriot is, and you yourself were a patriot. I mean, I know that from past conversations with you, that's why you got into service that you the way that you did, and especially with 9/11, you felt very compelled to step up your game and go overseas. I mean, how did you deal with the idea that you knew that you were innocent of those charges? And yet the government that you had worked for, believed in, defended, put your life on the line for, trumped up those charges against you. I mean, how did you deal with that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was very naive in that respect. And so the Justice Department made what they called a best and final offer. First, they offered me 45 years in prison. They came down to 10. And with that 45, they said, take the 45. You may live to meet your grandchildren.
Wow.
I said, I'm not going to do 45 minutes. And so they came down to 10. And then from 10 to 8, then to 5, then to 3.5. And 3.5 was their best and final. This is 3.5 years in prison is what I mean. And so my lawyers said, nope, we're going to trial. We haven't done anything wrong, and we're going to fight it. So we went to court, and we made 70 motions to declassify 70 classified documents necessary for my defense. We blocked off 2 days for those 70 hearings. And then when we got to court, the judge said, just as she comes out from her chambers, I'm going to make this easy for everybody. She said, I'm going to deny all 70 of these motions. I know you've blocked off days. I think it's unnecessary. I'm saying no to every one of them. Well, for all intents and purposes, Mark, we lost the case right then and there. On the way out that day, out of court, I said to my attorney, what just happened? And he said, we just lost the case. That's what happened. And I said, what do we do now? And he said, now we take a plea. Well, in my heart, I couldn't take a plea in good conscience. I didn't do anything wrong, and I was confident in the notion that I hadn't done anything wrong. So they came back and they said, okay, this is the best and final, 3.5 years. And I said, no, I'm going to go to trial. Once I get in front of a jury, they're going to realize how ridiculous this is, and they're going to realize how the deck was so stacked against me. This is not fair. This is not justice. My lawyer pulled me outside into the hall. He was very angry. And he pointed his finger at me and he said, "You know what your problem is? You think this is about justice, and it's not about justice. It's about mitigating damage. Mm. Take the deal." And I took the deal.
That's just chilling. It is just chilling to think what our own government can do against loyal patriots like yourself. Let's go and take a break there. Coming back, I want to talk to him a little bit more about General Flynn and what he thinks the next steps are for him. And then we'll start talking about how we got here. And welcome back. We're talking today to former CIA officer and whistleblower John Kiriakou. His last name is K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U. We'll link up some links to his some of his books, The Reluctant Spy and Doing Time Like a Spy. I've read Doing Time Like a Spy. It's absolutely a great book. I enjoyed that very much. You had a quote that you wanted to read about prosecutors.
Yeah, my attorneys told me about something that Robert H. Jackson had said. Robert Jackson was attorney general, one of many attorneys general under Franklin Roosevelt. And he went on to become a Supreme Court justice. And he was also the chief judge at the Nuremberg trials after the Second World War. He said something that now has become mandatory reading in every first year law course. And this is it. It's so important and it's so apropos to what we're seeing today with this Russia witch hunt. He says, "The prosecutor can order arrests, present cases to the grand jury in secret session, and on the basis of his one-sided presentation of the facts, can cause the citizen to be indicted and held for trial. He may dismiss the case before trial, in which case the defense never has a chance to be heard, or he may go on with a public trial. If he obtains a conviction, the prosecutor can still make recommendations as to sentence, as to whether the prisoner should get probation or a suspended sentence, and after he is put away, as to whether he is a fit subject for parole. While the prosecutor, at his best, is one of the most beneficent forces in our society, when he acts from malice or other base motives, he is one of the worst and most dangerous."
Mm.
And that is exactly what we have seen over the last 18 months. We see prosecutors acting from malice, and they are one of the worst in society.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just chilling to think that our own government is doing this to its citizens. I mean, it really is frightening. And that's why people have to pay attention to politics, is because you are literally giving people power over your lives. So General Flynn, he pled guilty to lying to the FBI, even though agents said that he didn't lie. Yep. It's being reported that he's still facing up to $5 million in legal fees. He's lost his home. He's been bankrupted. So what are your thoughts on now that Trump has been cleared of any collusion with Russia? Do you think that this will have a favorable impact on Flynn's case? What are the next steps you think for Flynn?
Well, Flynn's kind of in a difficult position right now because he's already pleaded guilty.
Yeah.
And so even though there was no underlying crime, there was no collusion with Russia, there was no deal between the White House and the Russian government to do anything, Flynn took a plea to making a false statement. So this is where that malice is involved. A gentleman, were he a prosecutor, would say, "This is all wrong. These are process felonies. These are felonies that wouldn't have been committed had there not been an investigation in the first place. The investigation came to nothing. These charges should all be dismissed." But they're not going to dismiss these charges. Now, this is a very, very minor crime. The federal sentencing guidelines call for no prison time at all. But that doesn't matter because, as you pointed out rightly, Mike Flynn has already gone through $5 million that he did not have. This is a guy who spent his entire adult life working for government as a military officer. He doesn't have $5 million to hand out to lawyers. And he's a felon. He's lost the right to vote. He may lose his military pension because of this. He's not allowed to ever own a weapon ever again. If he's ever caught with one, it's a mandatory minimum sentence of 8 years. So he's ruined.
Yeah.
Where's the justice there? That's not fair.
And all of this over a crime that simply did not happen. That's the thing that just boggles my mind.
Yeah, the crime did not take place. There was no crime.
Yeah. What an absolute abuse of the justice system. So in terms of the Trump Russian collusion thing that has now fallen apart because of the Mueller report, what do you think of your former colleague John Brennan after 2 years of saying that President Trump was guilty of treason? You know, not just that he colluded with Russia, but he was guilty of treason. Now suddenly he's saying he must have had bad intelligence.
It's funny that you asked me that question, Mark, because just last night I appeared on the Tucker Carlson show and he asked me exactly the same question. I go way, way back with John Brennan. I began working for John in 1989. I never liked him. I never respected him. And as I told Tucker Carlson last night, I thought that John was in way over his head intellectually at the CIA. He's just simply not very bright. Now, here you have a man who, as the director of the CIA, is arguably one of the most important and high-ranking officials in government. At least he was in the Obama administration. Before that, he was the number two at the National Security Council. Before that, he was the number three at the CIA. This is an important guy. He's been in important positions. He apparently has never bothered to open up a dictionary to look up the word traitor or the word treason, because those are words that carry with them the death penalty. We execute traitors in this country. Going back to George Washington, we have executed traitors. Did John Brennan really believe that the president of the United States had committed treason, the definition of which is providing aid and comfort to the enemy in a time of war? Either the man has a half a brain, or he's just a political hack, or it's a combination of the two. I tweeted yesterday afternoon that John Brennan should be ashamed of himself, and that if he had any guts at all, he would put his tail between his legs and he would apologize to the president, which he has not done. What he did was to say that he had been misinformed. Well, by whom? You have a master's degree. You speak multiple languages. You've headed the most, arguably, again, the most important agency in government. You hobnob with multiple presidents, but somebody not further identified misinformed you? That's a cop out.
Well, and I remember from previous conversations with you that you really think that Brennan's just an evil guy. I mean, what does it say about the intelligence community if that's the kind of guy that we've got leading some of these agencies? I mean, it's just really shocking. All right, coming back, we will get his thoughts on if he had to pick one mastermind behind all of this, who would he pick? And welcome back. We're talking today to former CIA officer and whistleblower John Kiriakou, who is the author of The Reluctant Spy and also Doing Time Like a Spy, both of which I'd highly recommend. You can find those at Amazon.com, and we'll link those up at iSpyRadio.com. So, John, in terms of if you had to put this whole Russian collusion thing, if you had to pin this on one person, who do you think that mastermind likely is?
You know, that's really the mystery right now. Just today, word began leaking out that that this may have started as early as 2015 inside the Obama Justice Department. So to tell you the truth, if we go back to the origins of the accusation, I would say that this begins with Eric Holder.
Wow.
I would feel confident saying that if we had access to all of the information, that all eyes would be on Eric Holder.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about Eric Holder, but why do you think that?
You know, I think they were so worried about Donald Trump, even that early on, even before the Republican primaries began, because he was just a giant question mark. He had no record, right? He had never voted in the U.S. Senate. He had never run a state. He had no record, and they just didn't know how to attack him. And you know, I've said too in the past, there's a difference between being criminal and being stupid. Anybody who's worked in government knows that if you have a meeting with the Russians, any Russians, as soon as they walk out the door, you pick up the phone and you call the FBI and you report it. But the Trump family has never been in government before, and they didn't know that what you do is you pick up the phone and call the FBI. Well, that's stupid. It's not criminal. And I think that there was a move afoot at the tail end of the Obama administration to make it criminal. Yeah. And let's not overlook the Steele dossier as well. I understand as well as any former intelligence officer that intelligence is not reliable because it has to be vetted first. And especially human intelligence is not reliable because people just get things wrong or they make things up or their motivation for giving you the information is perhaps not very good. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's revenge. We don't know. What we do know is that the Steele dossier originated as opposition research, not as intelligence. We also know that it originated with Hillary. It originated with a Republican who's never been identified. It's probably Ted Cruz.
Oh, wow.
But it should have been clear from the beginning that this was opposition research. This was not intelligence.
Well, so once they got this idea in their head that they were going to go after Trump, you know, I remember when I first heard about this, I was thinking that kind of the first blush we had with things was that Obama's intelligence agencies had been spying on the Trump campaign.
Yes.
Kind of like hiring the best private investigator in the world. You've got the power of the government to go in and tap his phones and everything else. I had kind of thought it was just a means really to spy on Trump's plans, strategies, and then pass those on to the Hillary camp so they'd have an advance warning. But then we learned there's far more than that, and they were using the legal system to try to undo an election. Do you think that was always the plan to undo an election, or do you think it just started as a means to spy on Trump, and it just sort of morphed into that insurance policy?
I think they never thought that they would have to undo an election because they thought there was going to be a coronation of Hillary Clinton, and that just didn't happen. Do you remember when Donald Trump said in the immediate aftermath of the election that the Obama administration, possibly NSA, had tapped his phones? Those were the words he used. They had tapped his phones. And everybody and his brother denied and denied and denied.
But what they were
What they were denying, though, was that there had been a tap. It was the word tap. Taps aren't used anymore. Taps went out in the 1970s. You know, that's when somebody would physically put a device on your phone or on the wire or the junction box leading to your phone. That's what's done in the movies. That hasn't been done in the United States in decades because our technology is so sophisticated. What he meant was that NSA or others were intercepting his phone calls. That I believed from the very beginning. We know that NSA spies on Americans. What's to stop Barack Obama or John Brennan or anybody else from just picking up the phone and calling the director of NSA and saying, listen, we need coverage on this line? It's as easy as that. They don't have to break in and plant anything. There is no such thing as a tap anymore. So when Donald Trump said, and what he meant was that his communications were being intercepted, I believed him and I still believe him. Because that's how those Obama people worked.
Well, so how does this sort of thing even happen? You know, now that it is this whole insurance policy, how did this happen? Can this sort of thing happen without the knowledge and approval of FBI higher-ups?
Well, that's a good question. Theoretically, yes. Practically, no.
Because you have to dedicate FBI resources to do this.
You do. You have to dedicate resources. Lindsey Graham yesterday called for an investigation of the FBI, not one just by some half-baked congressional oversight committee, but a real investigation of the FBI. And I wanted to just jump up and down because finally somebody said it. That is exactly what we need. Yes. We need a deep and thorough investigation of the FBI because the FBI is out of control.
Yeah. Well, we absolutely do, and I think that this ought to be a unifying thing where both Republicans and Democrats come together and say, this sort of thing cannot happen here in the United States anymore, and we need to get to the bottom of it. Real quick, only about 30 seconds here, do you think this leads all the way to Obama?
Probably not, and I say that because I think Obama was probably too smart to let there be a solid line going directly to him. There was probably a cutout. I wonder if that cutout was John Brennan or if it was Jim Comey. But I don't think Obama would have been foolish enough to allow himself to be implicated.
Yeah. That's kind of like how Hillary operates, is you never do it directly, but people around you know
exactly. Exactly.
People know what is expected of them. John, I want to thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Always great to talk with you.
And welcome back. I'd like to welcome now Dr. Jerome Corsi. He is the author of Silent No More, How I Became a Political Prisoner of Mueller's Witch Hunt. It's available as an ebook, and you can order that right now. You probably also know him for his commentary on Fox News and other places, but he's probably best known for his two New York Times bestselling books, Unfit for Command, about John Kerry, and also the 2008 hit The Obama Nation. Dr. Corsi, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be with you.
Seems like the last time that we had spoke, it was in December, you had just rejected Mueller's plea deal. So what's the status of your case now, given that the Mueller report has concluded?
Well, we, you know, all through, and it was right at the end of November, that right at the Monday after Thanksgiving, that I rejected Mueller's plea deal. So we've gone until this entire time, or months, thinking we, you know, that any day the FBI could break down the door and arrest me, like they did Roger Stone.
Right.
And we didn't know for sure until we were free of all this, until really the weekend, this weekend in March, that the Mueller report was filed, and it was clear there were going to be no more indictments, which meant we were in the clear. And so, of course, we feel vindicated. We feel that it's clear that, you know, the Mueller was trying to scare me, to bully me into pleading a crime I didn't commit, which I refused to do, and yet Mueller knew they couldn't prove it in court, otherwise they would have indicted me.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was a bluff on their part, and I think it's completely wrong. Prosecutors should not do that.
No, absolutely not, especially when they've got the power of the government behind them like that.
Right, exactly.
So Mueller was rolling along there, and he was forcing people into plea deals, trying to do that with you, but he did manage to do that with people like Papadopoulos. He's got Flynn now, and but you stood up to him and said no deal. And it really was only a matter of months thereafter that Mueller ended that investigation, hung up his hat. Do you think it was because people like you, and I think Roger Stone also did the same thing, said that he was not going to cooperate. Do you think he realized that the end was near, that he'd lost his power to terrify you, or that maybe he'd just run out of people who would be willing to lie?
Well, I think the testimony that the special prosecutor wanted me to give was critical to their collusion case. They believed I could connect Roger Stone to Julian Assange, and that if I had done that, then Roger would work with Julian Assange to collude or coordinate how the emails that have been stolen, Podesta's emails stolen from the Democratic National Committee or Hillary's campaign, could have been best used in October 2016 to hurt Hillary's campaign. In coordination, because Roger Stone was in coordination with Donald Trump. He'd been speaking with Donald Trump, even though Roger was not part of the campaign. And so they were looking for me to be the critical linchpin that connected, you know, Roger Stone, Donald Trump, to the Assange WikiLeaks, except it never happened. I don't know Julian Assange. I don't know WikiLeaks. I never spoke to them or had anyone close to them. And so, I wouldn't lie to say I'd introduced Roger to Julian Assange when I hadn't. And even though they threatened to throw me in prison for the rest of my life, they said they would prosecute me for crimes that I'd be spending 25 years in prison. I'm 72 years old. That'd be a life sentence. I said, I'm not going to do it. I cannot, in conscience, stand before a judge and put my hand in a Bible and under oath say I committed a crime I did not.
Right. Well, and just to be clear, to remind people, one of the reasons why Mueller was going after you is because you had correctly deduced that WikiLeaks was going to be releasing John Podesta's emails. And they thought, because you had figured that out, that meant that you must have been colluding with the Russians and colluding with WikiLeaks. You mentioned you think that they saw you as a linchpin, connect Trump with WikiLeaks to Assange and Roger Stone and all the rest. Do you think that maybe they were also trying to use you as kind of the stepping stone to go after Assange?
Very likely. I mean, very likely they were. I think that they, that I did not have and wouldn't lie to give them what they wanted. They had this predetermined narrative, and it may have included going after Assange. But, you know, if I did not give this information to Roger Stone, they, and they were solidly convinced I had, because they had my emails, they had my cell phone, they had my everything, my phone conversations. In July and August 2016, we took a trip to Italy. It was our, my wife and I, we had our 25th wedding anniversary, and we took the family to Italy. And in Italy, I connected the dots and did figure out that the emails Assange had left that he was going to drop in October were Podesta's, and they were going to be very damaging. And I did tell Roger Stone about this, and I told others. And so, you know, the when the FBI looks at all this information, they concluded I must have had a source which gave me that information. Well, I didn't. And when I told them, I just figured it out myself, they thought I was lying to protect Donald Trump and Roger Stone, which is not the case.
Right. So when they had first looked like, you know, offered this plea deal to you, I mean, that was end of November. You got December and January and February, March. So you got 4 months here, basically. I mean, that was a lot of stress to endure. How did you manage to cope with all that?
Well, it's very difficult because especially, you know, you consider even in November, should we take the plea deal? I mean, I thought, you know, if I take the plea deal, we don't have to spend $2 million in defending a case. If they bring these charges against me, then I'll lose and before a jury in Washington, D.C., they'll hate me and they'll sentence me to life in prison anyway. Should we just take the plea deal? And, you know, and they say there's no prison time. If, of course, you know, you can't count on that. At any rate, my wife woke up one morning and she said, I'd rather visit you the rest of your life in prison than not have you be the man I married. And that was kind of the critical thing. I knew... I had been imagining myself going in front of a federal judge. They had the judge picked out. They had the date picked out. They had the script for me to read. You know, Giuliani has said this. He's right. I circulated that script after I rejected the deal to the press. I made sure the press saw what they were offering me. And I just couldn't put my hand on the Bible and swear something I didn't do. I mean, you know, it's I'm not here for... an earthly purpose. I couldn't lie before God in order to stay out of prison.
Right, right. Well, I imagine during those 4 months there was an awful lot of sleepless nights. Let's go and take a break there. Coming back when we continue our discussion with Dr. Jerome Corsi, we'll ask him about who's at fault and who should pay for all of this. And welcome back. Continue our discussion with Dr. Jerome Corsi. He is the author of Silent No More, How I Became a Political Prisoner of Mueller's Witch Hunt. It's available as an ebook, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com, but you can also find that by going to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com as well. Also carries that. So in terms of this Mueller report, I'd like to get a little bit of speculation on your part. And for those who missed the first half of our show, we spoke with John Kiriakou, a former CIA officer and whistleblower who, like General Flynn and others, did nothing wrong but was bankrupted and pleading guilty and went to jail over it. We asked John if he had to pick one person who was the mastermind behind all of this Russian collusion and insurance policy and whatnot, who he thought it was. So if you had to pick one person who came up with all this, who would you pick?
Oh, I think this was initially Hillary Clinton and John Podesta. They figured it out when the emails were stolen and they wanted to blame it on Russia. I think both Hillary and Clinton, you know, the Democrats tend to blame the Republicans or others for things
what they're
doing.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
And I think it's pretty clear, you know, from the work that Peter Schweitzer has done on Russia and the reset when Hillary was Secretary of State, that Podesta and Hillary made millions of dollars selling classified U.S. military technology to Russia, and they didn't want that to come out. So they've decided to blame the email theft on Russia and blame that on Trump. And I think the others who picked it up, I think Obama picked it up. I think Brennan, together with British intelligence, I think it was quite a few of them involved in what ended up being a coup d'etat.
Yeah.
You know, this, I wanted to expose Mueller for I think, prosecutorial misconduct. That's why I wrote this book, Silent No More. I mean, while I was going through this horror show, you know, 40 hours of what I thought was going to be voluntary interviews with the special counsel, it turned out to be like they treated me like a criminal from day one, playing these memory traps, asking you questions about 2016, and then they have an 8-inch thick binder on this table, and they show you an email from 2016 and said, that contradicts what you just told us. You're lying. So I'm not lying. I thought I was lying because I couldn't give them contact to Julian Assange that I didn't have to link Roger Stone. So I just started writing this book, Silent No More, when I thought I was going to go to prison. And I decided I would document, you know, the FBI picks you up on in this, in your hotel, in their own cars. They don't want to be seen and followed driving these black SUVs through Washington. They take you to an unmarked FBI building. You come in through the garage into the safe room where you give them over all your electronics, your cell phone, your laptop, anything else. They take you up into a conference room inside the building, no windows. You have to even ask permission of the FBI if you want to go to the restroom. Do they accompany you to the door? You can't leave the room. And the income, three of the special prosecutors and 6 to 9 FBI, and they start questioning you for hours and hours and hours on end. It's well, more it's, like it's, an inquisition.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, it sounds like something straight out of Soviet-era Russia.
Right. I mean, it's like they're going to send you to the gulag on this if you don't tell them what they want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
you know, and the then they all act up. They all stand up and stomp out of the room and call my attorney into the next room. And he's gone for an hour or so, and I'm standing, and you know, I'm in this room alone with no cell phone or computer for an hour. There's an observation bubble on the wind and the ceiling. I can see that somebody in another room is probably watching me, but I'm, you know, counting the tiles on the floor. I'm going nuts and wondering and worrying if they're going to come in and arrest me right then, handcuff me, and take me to prison.
Hmm.
You know, the interrogation was terrible. They ridiculed my religion when I couldn't give them what they wanted. They ridiculed my books. My attorney said, they want to put you in prison, and this is payback all the way back to 2004, when I wrote Unfit for Command, co-authored it with John O'Neill, the Swift Boat book against John Kerry. My attorney said, look in your rearview mirror. There's a lot of Democrats' corpses in your wake. They hate you. He's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing is, they're doing this to an American citizen. Somebody that's been a patriot his whole life, and they're treating you like this. It's just shocking. Let's go ahead and take a break right there, actually. Coming back, we'll have more. Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of Silent No More, How I Became a Political Prisoner of Mueller's Witch Hunt. And up next, we'll get his thoughts on what should happen to the truly guilty in all of this, the people who pushed this hoax on America to undo the 2016 election. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Dr. Jerome Corsi. He is author of Silent No More, How I Became a Political Prisoner of Mueller's Witch Hunt. It's available now as an ebook. I can get that through Amazon.com, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Dr. Corsi, in that last segment there, you're talking about prosecutorial misconduct. And, I mean, they have you in this room. It sounds completely like something out of a spy novel in many ways, where or the Soviet gulag. You have also, at that same time, the last time we had talked, you had decided that you were going to sue the special counsel. And I'm curious where, now that Mueller's has wrapped his case, are you still going forward with that lawsuit against them?
Oh, absolutely. We filed a $350 million lawsuit in U.S. Federal District Court in Washington, D.C. The case is Corsi v. Mueller, and it alleges prosecutorial misconduct on Mueller's part and the way I was interrogated. I intend to keep that case going. I intend to win that case. We also filed a criminal complaint with the Attorney General against Mueller, and that was when Whitaker was acting Attorney General. I will expect and will be pressing Attorney General Barr to do something about it. I expect something to be done with that complaint. I pushed back. I said to Mueller, I am not going to agree to your plea deal because it's fraudulent. They wanted me to plead guilty to a crime I did not commit. I'm not going to lie before federal judge and God to say I committed a crime I didn't. So I decided I'd fight back, and I decided to write this book, Silent No More, and tell the whole story. And, you know, I was writing the book thinking I was going to go to prison, but I intended to fight back. Hmm. And that's the same with the lawsuit.
In terms of the next steps here, because I think something has to happen here. This sort of thing cannot happen again, as Trump has said. My dissertation research before I had to take a leave of absence due to family health issues was on trust, especially how to rebuild it once it's been lost. And there are various models and processes that have been proven over time to rebuild trust, and I'm not going to go into them here. But a common one among all of the researchers is that those responsible for a breach in trust must be held accountable. You simply will not rebuild that trust in that organization, or in this case, the government and the Justice Department. You will not be able to rebuild that until somebody is punished for it. So what should happen to the people that are responsible?
Well, I even in when I wrote Killing the Deep State, my previous bestseller, and I wrote that in 2017, I said there'd be three phases. I predicted that the Mueller would fail, and there is no collusion, and Donald Trump would be spared being impeached. But the next phase would be to do a counterattack, and the who is responsible for the FISA fraudulent warrant and the electronic surveillance, I think it was illegal, this sealed dossier, all this would have to be found out, and it would trace to Hillary, it would trace to Obama, it would trace to the deep state actors, with bad actors within the Department of Justice and the FBI, the CIA. I think John Brennan was deeply involved.
Yes, yeah.
And they're going to have to be punished. They're going to have to be investigated and punished. The third phase, which I think will conclude about the time Donald Trump is reelected, will be to realize, for the American people will realize, this was a coup d'etat. You know, we've not seen this kind of treason in America since Benedict Arnold.
No, absolutely not. And I agree. I think right now there's plenty of people on the right side of the aisle that do believe that this was an attempted coup. I mean, I don't know how you can look at it any other way. I mean, the goal of this was to charge him essentially with treason, where you're working with a foreign power to be able to win the election. And I don't know how you could say it wasn't treason. And treason is a crime punishable by death. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that John Brennan was accusing him of. But as far as dealing with the people that attacked you, these people wished jail on you. They wanted to put you in jail. They wanted to bankrupt you. They wanted to destroy your life. So what should happen to those people?
Well, they should be punished too. I mean, this is not ended yet. You know, I have it's ruinous in terms of a financial sense. I lost all my employment. Everybody abandons you. I lost all my consulting. I have no current monthly income at all right now, and $200,000 in legal debts, which are mounting because, you know, I still have the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Judiciary Committee that wanted documents. I'm sure they're going to want testimony. I'm sure we'll be subpoenaed. The Democrats don't look like they're ready to quit. So this is continuing, and the strain and the pressure of having to go back to Washington, having to give more testimony, all of that, I think, is a real burden on us, and I don't see an end in sight in the immediate.
Hmm. What about people like on that FISA court that allowed this whole dossier to be they basically took whatever it was that the FBI put in front of them with no questions asked. What do you think should happen to those judges?
Well, I think judges ought to be also punished. I think this whole FISA court is extra constitutional, and it needs to be abandoned. It gives the intelligence community a way to circumvent having to get a judge to issue a search warrant. So it's a much lower standard. Something like 99% of all these requests for electronic surveillance to a FISA court get approved, and clearly they can slip in evidence, which is slipshod, this Steele dossier, which was partly paid for by Hillary Clinton, but was never disclosed by the FBI or the FISA court, that was, you know, in part an opposition research document. It's just disgraceful. And
well,
it's not, it shouldn't be in America. We should not be having this kind of electronic surveillance this easily done at the whim of a FISA court.
No, we went too far with the Patriot Act, and I think we need to start reexamining some of that. We got about 45 seconds here with you. Real quick, do you think anything will happen to Hillary?
I think ultimately, yes. I think Hillary said that, you know, she went down, that she would take a lot of people down in Washington, and, you know, she hung, everybody would hang. I think Hillary knows that she was engaged in treason. I think Hillary was trying to do everything she could, first to deny Donald Trump the election, but on, you know, these intelligence grounds, planting these seeds that he was a traitor. And then certainly the insurance policies, Strozek and Page, which, you know, translated into trying to remove Donald Trump from office over these trumped up charges. And it's disgraceful. It is a coup d'etat. It needs to be, you said, if trust is going to be reestablished. We cannot have justice in America be politicized and weaponized. And we're going to criminalize politics. You know, justice needs to be blind, and the Justice Department needs to look at crimes, not politics as crimes.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock here with you. Dr. Jerome Corsi, his book, One More Time, Silent No More, How I Became a Political Prisoner of Mueller's Witch Hunt, and that is available on iSpyRadio.com. Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much, Mark.
There is still an awful lot more to go on this whole Mueller probe as we uncover all of this, especially the whole Russian collusion hoax. In fact, late Thursday, Rush Limbaugh, speaking on Hannity's show, said he now has information that it was more than just a setup to entrap some low-level Trump campaign worker like George Papadopoulos. Rush said it now looks like the FBI was trying to get the Trump campaign to directly hire some FBI operatives. If they had, those FBI operatives had planned to hire some Russian assets to work for the campaign. That way, there would be direct evidence that Trump colluded with Russia because those FBI assets would have hired the Russians to make sure. This was truly evil. It is truly evil that this is what our government does now. And now that we know, it is time something happens to the people who tried to do this. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.